You're listening to The Profile.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile podcast. I'm Andy Peck. For the last 19 years, it's been my joy to investigate how Christians can lead better by talking to a variety of Christian leaders inside and outside the Christian world. So whether you are in a leadership role or simply looking to maximize your influence for God, I hope you find this next conversation helpful. The show is brought to you by Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. Get full online access and the print magazine every month by becoming a subscriber. See special offers available now at premierchristianity.com. Thank you for joining us for this conversation. There are, of course, many other things you could be doing. Indeed, time management, as it is called, is a key area for any Christian to master, and especially a Christian in leadership. We all have exactly the same amount of time, but how we choose to spend it has a major bearing on our effectiveness as a leader. But you will know that simply having a diary or digital device does not solve the problem. Many have realized that time management is also about self-management, and we each have unique temperaments and energy levels, and life includes urgent demands or unexpected opportunities that can throw the best laid plans into disarray. Well, to help us navigate through this, I'm joined this week by Nigel Argall, the author of Do, Manage, Lead, Essential Bible Tools for Leaders, whose career has included time as a youth worker, lecturer, and consultant. He has a postgraduate certificate in education, in coaching and mentoring, a degree in social sciences and economics, and a master's degree in community education. He's also a professionally qualified youth worker. And in the interest of full disclosure, I was happy to provide an endorsement for the book. So I'm hoping after hearing his advice, you will want to include listening to this show as part of your week. So Nigel, thank you for joining us today.
Well, Andy, thank you so much. It is, as always, an absolute pleasure and a privilege to have this opportunity to talk. And brilliant topic, I think. I was reflecting on this beforehand. Time, many people have said time, it's the most democratic thing in the world, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter whether you're young, old, rich, poor, male, female. We all get 24 hours a day, 168 hours a week. Hopefully, and we're going to be exploring this, a little bit of choice as to what we do with that time and how we spend it. But it's interesting, isn't it? Very few people ever say to me, I struggle with time management. But what people do say is something like, I'm drowning, got too much to do, I feel under pressure, never get to the end of my to-do list. They don't use the words time management, but it's a universal issue. It is absolutely at the heart of our existence. So yeah, well worth looking at.
Well, amen. Thank you. So Nigel, where do you start, and what questions might we ask as a leader to better manage our time and ourselves?
Yeah, I'm a huge believer in not reinventing the wheel. You know, we're not the first people, despite the busyness of our culture, we're not the first people to struggle with this. What I want to do, actually, right at the start of this conversation, Andy, is introduce your listeners to what I think is the most simple, the most profound, the most useful, easily memorable tool for making sense of what we're doing with our time and where it's going. There was, in the middle of the 20th century, there was an American academic called Charles Hummel, who actually worked a lot with Christian unions in American universities. He was he's the guy that coined the phrase, the tyranny of the urgent. And it's I think most people have heard that, the tyranny of the urgent. It's a brilliant phrase because we all identify with that. There are points in the day or the week where we just have to do something. Now, a lot of people have built on his work, and probably the most well known is Stephen Covey in his book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, taken his work and developed it. Excuse me. What this model does, it basically says, look, in our work, in our life, it's not just work, it's the whole of our life. There's two aspects to anything that we do. Excuse me. The first is it important or is it unimportant? Or is it somewhere between those two things? And that will depend on our values, what we're trying to do. The second is it urgent, excuse me, or not urgent? Or again, is it somewhere between those two extremes? So if we're good at maths, we can work out anything we do in our life falls into one of these four groups. So what I want to do is just briefly talk through these because to me, as I say, it's a brilliant, essential, simple, memorable tool that we can use to start to make sense of things. So
Yeah, please
here's
do.
the
It sounds
first
very
one.
helpful. Absolutely. Yeah.
Here's the first one. Stuff that is important and urgent. Now, no, nobody's going to have any difficulty thinking about this. Some of your work is going to be like this. If you work in business, some machine breaks down, or a delivery doesn't arrive, or if you're in Christian ministry, your guest speaker doesn't turn up, or something's got to happen, and it's got to happen now. Or it could be in your own home life. You're going to do the school run and the car breaks down. I mean, it's important. You've got to get the kids to school. You've got to get to work, and it's got to happen now. So no difficulty sort of identifying that. Incidentally, some people, most of their work is like this, but this is fairly unusual. So I mean, an example would be if you work in accident and emergency in a hospital. I mean, you just sit there waiting for important and urgent stuff to come through the door. But most of us, this is not all our work. The other thing's worth saying is there's no sort of moral judgment on any of this. Things that are urgent and important, they often are crisis stuff. Something's gone wrong. But it could be something good. As you know, I live in Cornwall. I probably know at least three people who are on lifeboat crews. And as you will know, you could be cooking your kids' tea, the pager goes off, it's urgent, it's important, down to the lifeboat station. But it's also wonderful. It's volunteers giving up time to rescue people. So it's not good or bad, it's just looking at the way it is. So that's the first category. Here's the next one. Stuff in your working day, in your life that is important but not urgent. And hopefully that's a lot of your day and a lot of your life. So, if you're a teacher, you've got six lessons to do, but they're timetabled, not an issue. You've got the time, you're just going to get on with it. If you're a manager, you're sorting out next year's budget or booking in your staff appraisals or it's the evening and you're doing your home finances. It's important stuff, but it doesn't really matter whether you do it right this minute or you've got the time to do it. So it's what I call the humdrum, and hopefully that's going to be a lot of your day. Here's the next one. I've got four categories. We're on number three. Stuff that is not important, but it's urgent. Now, when you say that, a lot of people are going to go, well, hang on a minute. What could be not important but urgent? Key thing to understanding this is very often it's the urgency is brought in from the outside. It's not us making it urgent, it's someone else. So a classic example would be if you've got a landline telephone, the phone rings. I mean, it's urgent. If you don't pick it up, it's going to stop you. Pick it up. Find yourself in a conversation with somebody you think, oh, why did I start this? I mean, it might even be a member of your family or something, it might be your parents, your son, well, whatever. You're thinking, I wouldn't have chosen to do this now, but this has parachuted into my day. It's important because of what it is, but it's not what I wanted to do. It's urgent. I've got to fix it, but I didn't really want to do this now. Could be your kids fighting in the next room. You got to go and stop them before they kill each other. You didn't want to do it. Not important to your day, but you got to fix it now. So, as I say, it's often other people that make it urgent. Last category, and you know what's coming, not important and not urgent. And again, for a lot of folks, you go, well, what on earth could be in that category? My personal best favorite example of this is social media. Often, when I've done a task, whether it's urgent or important, I think I'll reward myself with 5 minutes on Facebook. You know what happens? Half an hour later, you're doom scrolling through stuff that was just irrelevant. But these guys have got you. They know you get a little dopamine hit from looking at the stuff, and you just think, oh, that's half an hour of my life I've just lost, and I'm never going to get back. So it's interesting. Again, it's down to value. Stephen Covey says sport is not urgent and important. I as a sports fanatic, I disagree. It may not be urgent,
yes.
But it's pretty important in certain times and places. So that's your basic model. Very easy. Four categories. Everything you do, whether it's work or your home life or whatever, can be put into one of those. Here's the big thing. How do we use that information? And incidentally, sorry, I forgot to mention this last one. Things like use of your mobile phone. I'm sure most people know this, but I've only recently discovered this. If you go into settings, you can find out how much time exactly you have spent on all those different apps. For most of us, it's sort of semi-shocking, I have to say. But this is part of time management. You have to have good information to make sense of it. So what are we going to do with that? We've got our four categories. So that's the first item, making sense of your day. You can do this yourself. I was talking recently to a woman who has a pretty important job in the National Health Service in Cornwall. She did this with her whole team. They got a big sheet of paper out. They marked it important and urgent, important, not urgent, and so on. Box of post-it notes. They just went through as a team. What do we do? Everything. You know, is it important? Is it urgent? Do we have to do it? What makes it urgent? Can we make it not urgent? Making sense of where your time is going is absolutely the first point. Here's this next insight, and this is absolutely the bit that can ideally change your life. If you said to people, okay, so which category do you put most time and energy in? Most people are going to say, well, obviously the first one. You know, at work we call this firefighting. You're living from deadline to deadline. It's, you know, you're under pressure, just trying to get through the day. The insight of this model is actually the box the category we really want to be focusing on is the second one, the one where it's important, but it's not yet urgent. Why? Because usually we do better work when stuff is not urgent. There are exceptions to this we'll explore, but usually we work better if the deadline is not immediate. We do better work, we're happier, we're kind of more focused. But it's, as I say, it's counterintuitive. It's back to Hummel. The urgent stuff tends to kind of drag us in. But so focusing on the second category, what I would say though, and this is really important, because I don't want your listeners, who some of them will be familiar with this model, I don't want anybody shouting at the radio and saying, "No, it's a great idea that doesn't work." It's a brilliant model. It's good. It's true. It's right, and it's simple. But I would be the first person to say it's takes a lot of time and energy and application to make this work. So make sense of your life, what you're doing in your own time, in your work time, and then saying, I need to focus on the stuff that's important but not yet urgent. Why is that tricky? Well, a number of reasons. First, almost by definition, it takes a lot of effort to get on top of the urgent stuff so you can then go, okay, now I can focus on the stuff that's not yet urgent. Because as we know, if you don't do the non-urgent stuff, it tends to become urgent anyway. Also, because a lot of us work in work environments, work cultures, where there is a culture of hurry addiction, rush, everybody's rushed off the feet. And I'm not suggesting they're not. I'm not suggesting people are faking this. But if you get on top of your work, if you become a person who is mostly focusing on the important but not urgent, with a little bit of space built into your day for the emergencies that crop up, you are going to look relatively calm and serene. And a lot of people, they're not going to think, oh, Andy's really on top of his work. He's well organized. He's good at time management. They're actually going to think, Andy's a bit underemployed here. He doesn't seem to have, he hasn't got enough on. He's not rushing around. Next big project that comes in, they will try and dump on you. So there's a big sort of cultural thing here. Last top tip really about making this work is to keep your brain in gear and be gracious. I knew a vicar who pretty much trashed his church because he would do things like setting up an evening meeting, which the volunteer youth workers had to go to, or something like that. He would turn up late for his own meeting, and when people said, "Why are you late?" he'd go rather pompously, "I was reading my children's bedtime stories because it was important," ignoring, of course, the fact that most of the people in front of him had skipped their children's bedtime stories in order to get to the meeting. So, if we become good at this, there's no sort of room for vanity or pomposity. But that's the plan. Make sense of where your time is going, what you're doing, and then that sort of trying to focus on the not yet urgent, but the important. We work best, we're most productive when we do that.
That's brilliant, Nigel. And that in itself, I think, could be an enormous of enormous value to us. I suppose that the next question is that obviously not all time is equal, and that's kind of connected to what you've been saying, that our energy levels are also a factor. So say someone is working 40 hours in a week, but it is draining kind of work, is very different from someone for whom the time they spend is much easier. And I'm thinking particularly those in church leadership who can have half an hour with someone that just wrecks their week, because of the conversation matter. And if someone looks analyzes their week and think, well, this is what you've done, but actually they may be shattered by the end of it, not because of the time spent, but because of the energy spent. And I'm just wondering if any thoughts on energy depletion and organizing your day.
No, absolutely. I think you're right. The thing with the model we've just looked at, the kind of Hummel-Covey urgent important kind of matrix model, I think it's brilliant. I think it works. It's been absolutely foundational for me, and I know a lot of people in their careers. What I would say, though, as a Christian, is in and of itself, it's not enough. It's not sufficient. And I think there's at least two other ways of looking at time and time management that we need to look at. So one we'll get to in a minute, which is kind of about purpose rather than volume of time. But the other one, you're dead right. It's about energy. And I'm actually a huge believer in that. I think it's a different way. It's about energy. It's about stress. It's some things. This is a personality thing. Some things energize us and some stress us and deplete us. And that varies from person to person. What may energize you could deplete somebody else and vice versa. So I enjoy the process of preaching, but like a lot of preachers, after half an hour, I'm zonked. I kind of get off the platform. This sounds a bit pompous and pretentious, but sometimes people come up and they want to talk to you, and it's lovely. It's an absolute privilege, but you're kind of just drained, and it's very hard to do that switching from preaching mode to sort of coaching one-to-one dialogue mode. It's not, and that's not about weakness. It's about sort of self-awareness. So if I preach on a Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, I'm just going to take the dog for a walk or snooze on the sofa or something like that, and I am surrounded by people, particularly my wife. At that moment, I just need my wife to go, "Darling, you were great." I may not have been great, but she can tell me on Tuesday if I wasn't great. In the
Sure.
moment, I just tired and need to recuperate, and we can talk about it later. So.
Sure. And Nigel, you touched on what gives us energy and what doesn't, and that obviously feeds into temperament. Those who know Myers-Briggs know that one of the markers is whether we're structured by temperament or spontaneous by temperament. And so for some, even talking about time management sounds exhausting and sounds like a burden and a guilt and oh dear, because they thrive on spontaneity. I don't know which, whether you know your Myers-Briggs and where you fall. I'm on the more J structured end, so for me this is fine because I like this, but I have friends who aren't.
No, absolutely. You're dead right. I'm a huge fan of Myers-Briggs, and like yourself, I mean, I could tell you exactly what I am, but I'm certainly a J. So, in terms of that first model we looked at, urgent, important, focusing on the second category. Here's an interesting thing. I always say this to people because I think it's brilliant to do some kind of personality assessment, and Myers-Briggs is one of the most well-known. The really important thing is this. I think those things they're descriptive, they're not prescriptive. In other words, it's good to know what your natural inclination is, but you do not need to be a victim to that. You know, God has given us autonomy and consciousness. And actually, one of the brilliant things about knowing your Myers-Briggs or whatever it is you can go, okay, actually, yeah, I'm that sort of person who likes a very predictable day. So I'm very good at planning my day and sticking to the plan. If you are the sort of person who is sensing, just likes to kind of go with the flow, what might the day hold, spontaneous, respond to surprise visits or phone calls, that's fine. But, you don't have to be like that. You can enjoy that. And that's brilliant. And God loves diversity and creates variety. But, you don't have to be a victim to that. You just need to know that it will take you more time and effort to be organized. But as I say, there's no necessarily right or wrong here. When I taught at a Bible college, I had students who would, when they were submitting an essay, they would literally work up till 5 minutes before the submission time. I would find that incredibly stressful. But for them, they needed that adrenaline buzz to get the last bit of the task done. And so it didn't suit me, but it seemed to suit them. So there's no right and wrong. But yeah, awareness of your personality type, awareness of your energy levels, awareness of whether you're good at organization or whether you need to put more energy in is brilliant.
Nigel, maybe we can move on to what's called the work-life balance. And some have suggested that's a bit of a myth, and frankly, it's a burden to people to think, I can segment my life into work and play and get the right amount of energy, and because 1 week follows another and life just happens, and you know we all understand the need for me time in quotes, but nevertheless, what do you make of work-life balance within this context?
Well, Andy, I'm a little bit, well, but I don't know, I feel a little bit quirky here because, as you know, in our culture, it's just something that is talked about all the time. You'll hear it on the radio and within professions. My wife works in teaching. There's a lot of discussion of work-life balance. I'm actually quite uncomfortable with the whole idea. And I'll tell you why, because when you use the phrase work-life balance, the image is almost of either a sort of seesaw with work on one end and life on the other, or an old-fashioned set of scales with and the implication is, if I can have enough good stuff in the life bit, time together, family, sport, entertainment, that will balance the rubbish I have to put up with in my work. Now, don't misunderstand me. I do understand that way of thinking about it, and I've lived like that. There's been times when, for me, work's been super stressful and you're just living for the weekend or the next holiday. But it's not, what I wouldn't say is, it's not a good way to live. First, for two reasons. First of all, because I think we in our Christian faith, we have this idea of vocation. My work is more than just a job. Now, it's really obvious if you're a minister or a Christian youth worker or something, but what if my son's just started as a head teacher of a primary school? What a vocation. What does it mean not just to be a head teacher, but to be a Christian head teacher, to bring your values to that job? It could be more challenging. What does it mean to be a Christian dentist? You've got to work that out. There's a qualitative difference. We're not just doing a job for a wage. It should ideally be something that is rich and deep and fulfilling. Now, again, I don't want people shouting at the radio. I am the first person to say theologically work is broken, because of the fall, because of Adam and Eve. What does it say in Genesis? You will produce food out of the ground by the sweat of your brow. What was creative and rewarding has in some sense been marred and broken. So we have to live with that. But despite that, I just want us to have a higher sort of sense of what we're called to. And I know people, both Christian and non-Christian, who go, my job's pointless, my job's meaningless, but pays for foreign holidays. I don't want to sound critical, but I don't think that's a good way to live. You know, I think we are called to something better. So that's the first reason why I'm uncomfortable with this work-life balance thing. The second is, I think there are times when God just calls us to do something. You know, if Andy, if you and I were in the east end of Ukraine right now in a trench with a couple of other guys, you know, and every day 20 Russian soldiers are coming at us, sitting in the trench saying, am I living my best life? It's not a helpful question. You know, we all know people who at certain times there's calling on their life, or there's illness, or there's accident. My grandfather went to fight in the First World War. Wasn't his choice. It scarred him, changed his life, but it was what he had to do then. And we all know Jesus saying, look, you know, you want to save your life, you will lose it, lose your life for me, and you'll save it. And I don't think that's just about when we die and go to heaven. I think that's a here and now. So there is value in the whole work-life balance thing. And there are times when we have to say, look, this job's really bad for me, or this situation's bad for me. But in and of itself, the kind of am I always finding this satisfying and fulfilling? They're good questions, but they're sort of dangerous questions for us as Christians, I think.
Sure. Nigel, time's almost defeated us, but just time, obviously, to remind people that your book, Do Manage Lead, includes a chapter on time management. Are there other books that you found helpful along the way?
Yeah, a couple. I've mentioned Stephen Covey and Seven Habits. I mean, he should be paying me commission for the number of these I've sold or bought from the people. But you know, all-time classics, been around 40 years, well worth reading. The other one I was going to mention is John Mark Comer's book, Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. It's good, but with conditions. I say that because, you know, as a guy who speaks from brilliant experience, burnt out as a pastor, had to completely reorganize his life, there are some times where the book is frustrating. He mentions at one point, I think he does his emails once a week. And I can imagine a lot of readers like me going, well, I'm glad you can do your emails once a week, because you know, most people I know cannot do their emails once a week. They would be in a lot of trouble. But with those caveats, still well worth reading. So yeah, those are my two top tips for books.
Brilliant. And Nigel, you're a consultant. How would people get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'd love to hear from people. The best thing is my website. So it's argall.co.uk, and Argall is spelt ARGALL. So you can contact me through that. Would love to hear from people. If you agree with what I've said, disagree with what I've said, we'd still love to have a dialogue with you. So very much up for that.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for your wisdom on the show this afternoon. And for some, this is going to be really life-changing. So much appreciated.
Great. Thank you very much indeed.
It was great to chat with Nigel Argall. Argall again is ARGALL. If you Google Seven Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey, Covey, and the word four quadrants, you'll get a chart of what Nigel was outlining. And I, for one, will be benefiting, I'm sure, from his material and what he shared. And I hope, of course, that listening to the Leadership Show is part of your week and gets into the important category. This is Andy Peck, thanking you for your company and looking forward to the next time. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.